Accession number 20519, Reel 3.
Driver John, Reel 3.
Yeah, I can't remember any of the patrol being in the marsh or coming on the plane to Japan with me. I don't really know the extent of the injuries to the other members of the patrol, other than that Gwyn, who came from the same village as myself, took the full brunt of the mortar bomb that landed and was killed instantly. When we arrived at Japan, I was taken to the British Commonwealth Hospital in Kure in Japan. Kure was evidently quite a major port in the last World War, and I know they had a submarine base there for the Japanese Navy. The hospital had originally been a Japanese military hospital, so I was given to understand anyway. When I initially was at the hospital, my eyes were bandaged up, and so when I talked to people, I couldn't see them, and I inevitably would ask, like, who are you and what regiment were you in and so forth. I remember talking to a New Zealand gunner who had been wounded in Korea and had a bullet which went in to his thigh and out the other side, and he had a hole in his leg which is big enough to put your fist in, really. When I'd asked him what was the matter with him, and he told me, I remember saying to him how I thought it was really tough that he should have an injury like that, and he said he thought he was lucky not to be like me, you know, at the time. Anyway, the other thing I remember was lying in my hospital bed, and someone came to visit me one day, started asking me how I was, and I said, I'm okay, thanks, but who are you? And evidently it was some brigadier or other who was walking around the hospital looking and talking to the wounded, you know. I certainly didn't talk to him as if he was a brigadier at the time, because I didn't have a clue, you know. But anyway, I did have an interesting meeting, though, with one of the doctors at the hospital. He was a Dr. Moses, who originally came from South Wales. And I'd been quite keen on playing football when I was back home. And I played a decent standard of football. I was playing for a team called Taftswell United in the South Wales Amateur League. It happened that Dr. Moses, who was the ward doctor, had come from Taftswell. His mother still lived there. And he was kind enough to ask his mother to contact the secretary of the football club. And they took a photo album across to my mother for her to see the place I was staying in, you know. It was quite nice, really. But there you are. I'm not sure how long I stayed in the hospital, but it must have been a few weeks, at least. I went then to the British Commonwealth Convalescent Depot, which was based in the old submarine camp the Japanese submarine base, only a couple of hundred yards from the hospital, really. I think probably more than like 300 or 400 yards, and they had the sort of submarine pens were still there, and it was a camp where all the wounded went for rehabilitation, and every week you saw the camp medical officer, and everyone was in a grade from 1 to 4. Grade 1 was the grade where you were basically fit enough to return to your unit or get a posting elsewhere. If you were 4, that was the bottom of the pile, you'd probably just come into the camp from the hospital. I stayed at that camp for the rest of my national service. After being a patient there, I was given a posting with I had the option of helping to run the unit canteen or join the camp police, and I preferred the option of going into the canteen, where there was a Corporal Grandin who was ex-Welsh Regiment, and he was in charge there of the canteen. We had a couple of Japanese civilians working there as well to do cleaning and what have you. And after a month or two, assisting the corporal, he left to go home for demob, and I was given 2 stripes and became a fully fledged corporal for the rest of my national service. So I stayed there until I went home for demob. I think probably jumped on a boat round about end of October to November 1953.
Were you satisfied with the medical treatment you got?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm quite sure that they did all that they could. I was told that I had a piece of shrapnel lodged in the bone above my left eye, which is called the orbit, I believe. And that piece of shrapnel is still in there today. I was told it couldn't be removed because it was against a nerve of the eye, and that it was likely to cause more damage if it was removed. So it's still there, and I have a blind spot before my left, in my left eye, a little black dot that's before my, you know, in front of me all the time. And I suffer from photophobia, I think the term is, where the eye reacts to bright lights. And I very often think when I'm looking at people and talking to people that my left eye is sort of partially closed, that, you know, I sometimes wonder what people think, but that's what it is, you know. I've got so used to it, I really don't even think about it most of the time.
Were you awarded a pension because of it?
Yeah, I was awarded a 20% disability pension, which, if I remember rightly, was something like 10 shillings and sixpence a week, going back to the sort of mid-50s. But of course it's considerably more now. It's I'm not quite sure what the weekly is now because I have it monthly. It's around about £90 a month.
When you were in Korea, what did you think of the enemy, if anything?
I was there long enough to have a great deal of respect for them. One of our listening patrols out there, I didn't mention it earlier, but you just jogged my memory, said that on one occasion a Chinese patrol had approached them. They didn't know that the Chinese were there until sort of empty beer cans or empty cans of some sort were thrown in their midst, just as if to say, these could have been hand grenades, and, you know, we could have sorted you out. I know that a lot of troops in Korea suffered a great deal in when they were in certain positions, like a position known as the hook, and the Chinese had dug tunnels underground until they came up just in front of our positions, and then after dark they just came out and overran the positions. The people responsible for giving orders, as far as the Chinese were concerned, must have been quite cold, though, in a way, because the Chinese troops, when attacking, used to come up under their own fire. And lots of them used to be killed like that. I know that Lablu was in the Duke of Wellington regiment and was from the town of Llantrisant, near my home, was wounded in Korea, and I was given to understand that he was also taken prisoner. And I was given to understand that when taken prisoner, he had to crawl back to a tunnel to go back into over to the Chinese side, and that he couldn't crawl a yard without crawling over a dead body, which says something, if that's true, you know, and I quite believe it, really.
Did you ever feel any hatred for the enemy?
No, I don't think I did. Certainly, I knew that we were there to defend South Korea, and I don't suppose I could turn around and say that I thought of the enemy as someone I should actually hate, though, no. But certainly someone that I should fight should it be necessary, yeah.
Did the political aspect of the war mean anything to you?
At the time, very little. But of course, I mean, I know now that it was very much a bit like the Berlin situation, in that, you know, there was a disagreement, as I understand it, between Russia and America and, well, all the powers, about the division of, or unification of Korea, and that's because of that disagreement, it became North and South Korea.
How do you feel now about having done national service with King's Liverpool in Korea?
I hear a lot of people say that national service would do the youngsters of today a power of good. In some respects, I think I would agree with that. I would agree with it if it was national service where the youngsters never actually saw action. Too many national servicemen saw action and probably paid the consequences for it by not returning, you know. So, as far as I'm concerned, it was quite an experience, and I think that I look upon much of it in a positive light, because I've gone since 1953, coming out of the army. I've considered myself to be rather fortunate in getting out of that situation. And difficult situations since then have not particularly fazed me. I've tried to look at things in a very practical manner and work them through quite sensibly. And I'd like to think I'd done that, you know. So I'm not quite sure if my experience in the army totally did that. I'm sure my upbringing had a lot to do with it as well, you know.
You told me you came from quite a religious background.
Yeah, I did, in that my father was not a very educated man, but he had strong religious beliefs and was actually a lay preacher. We went to a church or chapel three times on a Sunday, and we went in the week as well when I was a young child. It tended, as when my father became ill and I was in my teens, it fell away then. But I still went to church and became a confirmed member of the Church of England, but I'm not really a practicing. I don't practice my religion now.
I think there's something that you told me earlier off the record that you wanted to add about training.
I'd forgotten until something you said jogged my memory, that whilst I was in Brecon doing a continuation training, we did camped guard duties. And at Derrin Lines, the guard room at the entrance to the camp was quite near to the officers' mess. The officers' mess was, from memory, say about 80-90 yards up the road, just away from the guard room. And opposite the guard room was a sentry box. And on this night, it was my turn to be in the sentry box. I think we probably did a couple of hours on, then go wandering around the camp, maybe for a couple of hours, and then a couple of hours off duty. I can't remember the timing of it all, but it was certainly my time to be in the guard sentry box with my rifle. And the officers' mess used to sort of turn out late at night after having a few drinks. And this particular night, an officer came out of the officer's mess and staggered down the road, obviously under the influence of drink, and came to the sentry box. I'd seen the officer come in and had smartly stepped forward and was outside my sentry box, looking prim and proper, as a soldier should be in the circumstance. And he proceeded to give me a dressing down for being back in the sentry box and sleeping. And I felt very, very angry, because I was being spoken to by someone who was obviously under the influence of drink and was in the wrong. And I knew that I hadn't been sleeping and that I'd been carrying out my duty. And I suppose I have a streak in me that's stubborn and self-righteous in a way. I found it very hard to take, but I took it. I stood there and took it. And it was that sort of thing in the, that I didn't like about the army, you know. People talking to you as if you were a thing rather than a human being. And of course it happened not only with that particular officer, but sometimes with NCOs as well. But that was probably the worst one. I've always remembered that, and I've always felt a degree of anger when repeating that. But there you are. That's where it goes. Put it down to experience.